On the Table, Topics for Toastmasters, a podcast production of Toastmasters District 10. It's not a manual for beginners. Interpretive reading is one of those manuals that requires experience and some passion before a Toastmaster picks it up. It also requires unique evaluation skills. These are not the average speeches where body language, gestures, and eye contact are critical parts of the presentation. That makes these speeches different and difficult. Today we're talking to Carol Perhinsky of District 62. She's the former region advisor for Region 6 and a good friend of District 10. Let's talk to Carol about the interpretive reading manual On the Table. This is On the Table, Topics for Toastmasters, a podcast production of District 10 Toastmasters International. We're here to help Toastmasters advance with advice, tips, and hacks to earn the Distinguished Toastmaster Award. I'm your host, Kim Craggy, DTM. I'm talking to Carol Perhinsky. Hi, Carol. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Kim. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
You're here today to do a manual review for our advanced manuals, Interpretive Reading. Did you like this manual?
I loved this manual, but my first response when I was a early Toastmaster, let me avoid that manual.
That's kind of my feeling about it, because it's not speech. It's very different sort of mindset addressing how you present somebody else's material.
Absolutely. And I avoided it. So I listened to other people give these speeches and I thought, I am definitely not going to do this manual.
What changed your mind?
I owned it. I owned it. I was looking around for, you know, new manual, new project, new challenge. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? I'm going to have to just bite the bullet and take a closer look at it. So that's what happened, is I pulled it out, started looking at it, and then I put it aside again. I did this a couple times, but it was around the time where I was just getting assigned as region advisor. So it was last spring, and I was looking for a new challenge beyond being a region advisor, of course. I wanted a speaking challenge, and this is where this interpretive reading manual came into play, was it was a challenge for me. The area that I found really fascinating, though, was when I finally made the decision to go for it, what really helped me was my theme. I selected a theme, and I don't know exactly how the theme came to me, but I think it was when I was looking at it could have been the poetry, it could have been the play. I did a lot of research, which is something I don't do for most of the manual speeches that I give. I do research, but I don't do targeted research like this. I went to the Michigan State University Library. I went through all of their books. When I was doing research on plays, I went through and just typed in plays and tried to find what plays I could actually get access to so that I could read it at a club meeting. Or poetry. I was watching a lot on the internet saying, okay, I go to poetry slams on the internet and trying to say, okay, what is it that they're doing that I like or don't like in the way that they're reading these poetries? And where do I get these poems? That was something that was not easy, or, you know, I didn't know. The Read a Story, that was the easy one for me. The first project, I started right out and I'm like, I have just been reading this book from One Book, One Community. It was called The Glass Castle. Loved it. Loved the book. And there was an interesting metaphor in there where the author talked about the importance. Well, the author was talking about a dialogue with her mother, and the mother said, well, the animals have it easy in the zoo. They have it easy. And the daughter's like, what do you mean? They're caged. And the mother said, well, they chose safety. They chose safety instead of being, you know, instead of being free, you chose to be safe. And that was a choice that the mother and the daughter continued to have as a conflict. I'm going to call it a conflict through their lives. It's a different perspective. And that's what actually probably got me going on this theme, which was I wanted books and this, well, any work of written work that was done by women about women. And so all of the projects that I selected were women authors writing about women.
Did picking a theme help you figure out what it is you wanted to do when it came to making a selection for which type of literature you were going to work with?
Picking the theme helped in many respects. It helped me narrow. It actually helped me narrow the breadth of projects, the breadth of work that I could select.
Okay, so you weren't going to be looking at Robert Louis Stevenson for a poem if you're looking for women authors. That worked for you.
That absolutely worked for me. And it also allowed me, well, I think the research part is really important. You know, when I'm coming up with things, I didn't know where to start sometimes. And I remembered with the monodrama, I remembered seeing a play when I was in Ontario. And it was at Stratford, Ontario, and I saw a monodrama there of a woman who was from the mid-1800s, and she was married to a slave owner, and she was a British actress. But I couldn't remember anything more about her, but I had to go back on the internet to find the actual play that I attended 10 years earlier, and then from there I got the woman's name. It was Fanny Kimball. And from there, then I could search my Michigan State University library to find her work, and which the library had books going back to the 1800s on her work. And then I was able to go through the various journals that were there and decide, okay, I want to take this time frame and go through that. And I read it, and I read the whole book, you know, preparing for this speech. Which part of that book do I want to take as part of the monodrama?
You put in a great deal of work. You mm-hmm. just put in an amazing amount of work into preparing for one presentation in this manual. Does everything take that much work?
You have a choice on how much work you want to do. I chose that amount because I was passionate about the topic, and I was passionate about the message that these women had. And for me, that passion just overspilled itself, and I wanted to spend the time to get the answers that it was like I was taking an undergraduate course in women's studies or something. I wanted to get these answers of what is it that I'm searching for. I still am not positive. So if any women professors out there, women's studies professors out there want to guide me, I'd be happy to hear it.
I have never, ever heard anybody say this about an advanced manual, that this was the start of a project that is going to be a part of their lives from now on.
Well, to me, this was. And preparing for this podcast allowed me to go back over the messages in each one of these projects. I loved that. You know, so what was the message of my choice in Fanny Kimball? And what I remember was when I was reading it, I actually read it to Spartan Toastmasters, one of my university clubs, and mostly business students, a couple medical students. They didn't know what the word flogging meant, F-L-O-G-G-I-N-G. And I thought, isn't that interesting that they don't know what that word means, because it's such a prominent word in our history, of especially African-American history. And
yes.
these students didn't even know what that word meant. It means whipping. These slaves were whipped or flogged, and it's a terrible part of our history. But I thought it was interesting that the students didn't know what that word meant. So each of the projects also taught me something about the people that I'm interacting with, in a variety of ways, what they liked or what they didn't like. Apparently, I give a very good voice impersonation for the mother in A Raisin in the Sun. People went crazy about my mother accent. I gave it with a southern drawl. And that was the biggest lesson from this manual, was the importance of voice. It's not about reading somebody else's speech, which is what you talked about earlier. It's about impersonating the individuals that you are taking their lives to share with others. And I become that individual. And I'm not supposed to look at my audience, which was very hard for me. I'm supposed to only look down. But my projection is through voice. And so if I need to work on voice, this is a great manual to do that. If I want to work on pauses, impersonation of different characters, accents,
That's really interesting that you bring that out about voice. That's something that we talk about vocal variety a lot, but we assume that it is a certain fashion and a certain style directed toward giving a speech. And this interpretive reading manual isn't speechy at all, that you get to give a play and monodrama. Those are things that we're not going to see anywhere else in Toastmasters. So you have really expanded. This manual really expands what is available to the Toastmaster to do, to give more dramatic interpretations.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I loved the research part. I already mentioned that. Let me talk a little bit more about one of the projects. This is the oratorical speech, the last project, Project 5 of the manual. I selected Anita Hill's confirmation hearing. She changed the world for women in the United States and working women, and it had a huge positive effect.
The oratorical speech, what exactly is an oratorical speech? What does the project require you to do?
Well, the project requires us to go and get a speech associated with, a famous speech. So we're going after somebody who's given a famous speech. It might be Lincoln's second inaugural address, for example. It could be Martin Luther King's. I remember watching somebody give Martin Luther King's address. We're capturing that information, and then we're reading it to the audience. Our assignment, I'll just glance here at the assignments, to select, rehearse, and present a famous speech. Employ all of the interpretive reading skills to bring this speech to life. You are encouraged to use gestures, body movement to enhance your presentation. If possible, dress in costume.
Oh, my. Is there a time limit on this speech, or is it give the speech?
8 to 10 minutes. And so when I took Anita Hill's speech, I had to pare it down significantly, probably almost 50% to give her speech.
Did you do the same with the play?
Most of the projects I did have to pare down. The poem was the one that I could not pare down. That one is a long, they give you a lot of time to give. The poem was 6 to 8 minutes, but most of the poetry out there, I mean, it's usually 2 to 3 minutes as a poem. So the play was 12 to 15 minutes. Some of these are longer speeches, yes.
Okay, let's talk about the poetry. This is project number 2, interpreting poetry. This
That's
is
right.
a controversial project, and I see this discussed on some of the websites. How many poems are you allowed to do? Because it says read a poem, which
yes.
implies singular.
Uh-huh. That's true. But and how could I go 6 to 8 minutes with one poem? And I couldn't find a poem that lasted that long.
In an effort to meet the time limits, you decided to go for 2 poems.
That's right.
I don't think that there's a wrong way to do this. I'm just going to say that the manual says one thing, and a lot of people get very rigid.
Mm.
It says a poem, therefore you will do one poem. But you decided to go with 2 poems, both
right.
on a similar theme. Tell
right.
me about how you did this project.
This one, I ended up selecting the 2 poems because I was focused on Fanny Kimball, which was a later project, but I started focusing on that at the same time I was trying to select which poems do I go with. And I ended up selecting Sojourner Truth's Ain't I a Woman, and a poet that most people probably haven't heard of. It's Rebecca Gumpert Heinemann, and she's a Jewish mother in the mid-1800s, and she wrote a poem called Woman's Rights. So these 2 poems together were projecting that women have a right in our society, and we need to have that voice heard. I didn't do so well with Rebecca's poem. I didn't do well with that one at all, and I got feedback to that effect. But with Sojourner Truth's one, I did much better.
How do you balance these 2 very different voices, a Jewish woman, an African-American woman who was a slave? How do you balance those voices in one project?
It was their message that connected it in my mind. And they were from similar time frame as well. But the message, I think, is what was most important in this selection.
I could pick two very different poets and put them together if the theme matches for this project.
I think that depends on you and what you're interested in doing. That's what I did. And it worked up to a point. Like I said, when I read Rebecca's poem, I didn't do so well with that. And what was missing was my passion for her message.
Ah.
And so when I read Sojourner Truth's poem, I was much more passionate about her message. And I thought she had an excellent message. Of course, many of us do. That's why we like her. And that's why we talk about her today. And it showed in my voice as I was speaking.
How do you develop a voice in poetry? How did you do it?
I don't know the direct answer to that, Kim. And, you know, there's guidance here that they have rhythm, meter, cadence, and rhyme, and I'm not supposed to allow to get myself carried away with any of that. I've got to hold control as I'm communicating the poem. How do I end up conveying that poem is through my voice again. I mean, that's the way that it has to be communicated. I could speed up, I can slow down, I can add an accent, which I did with Sojourner Truth's pauses. Pauses were so powerful. Yet when I watch poetry slams, one of the things I notice is they just fly right through that poem. They just fly getting that information across. But I think the pauses is what really allows the audience to get the message, because poems themselves can be so twisty in terms of the sequencing of words that we don't always get the message even after hearing it.
A lot of times when I've seen this one done, because it is a single poem, people have gone to Dr. Seuss.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the worst possible choice to make, because you can't break out of his rhythm. It takes a lot of effort. And then the whole rhyming structure, it takes control from the poetry reader. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a bad choice. Mm-hmm. I think maybe choosing Ain't I a Woman is probably a better choice, because you're not going to fall into that and you can interpret it.
I would say there's so much more to poetry than Dr. Seuss. And to expand our horizons, you know, try.
Carol, thanks so much for your time, for talking with us about the Interpretive Reading Manual. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume you're going to recommend it to everyone.
I do, when you're ready. I did this manual in 2 months. When I finally gave myself permission and figured out how to do it, boom, I went through this manual like hotcakes. I loved it.
Thanks so much for taking time with us today, Carol Prohinsky.
Thanks so much, Kim. It's been a pleasure to be on your podcast.
Thanks for listening to On the Table, Topics for Toastmasters. Our music today is from Incompetech.com. Meeting adjourned.